Now at every stop along his European adventure, Mr. Bush has been stumping for his most closely held foreign policy ideas. The most receptive audience thus far he's faced has been in Warsaw, but so far the rest of the continent has yet to match Poland's enthusiasm. Our Dan Shore discussed the Bush administration's foreign policy strategies with Lee Hamilton, director of the Woodrow Wilson Center in Washington, D.C., and Jessica Matthews, president of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace.
Jessica, first, you know, when a new president goes on a foreign trip, there are basically two sides to the trip. One is to simply sell himself, charm, whatever you call that, and the other is to sell his policy, if he has his policy, or to get help in formulating his policy. Looking at the Bush trip to Europe, how would you characterize how he's done on policy formation and policy sales?
Well, I don't think he went with any hope of getting help on policy formation, Dan. I think he went to try to sell. Problem is that he didn't really have a policy to sell. He had a notion, but he had no more detail to fill in. So it's hard for anybody else to say yay or nay. I'd say he got politeness. I think he got pretty clear skepticism, particularly from the major European powers.
And Lee, there were a couple of things that seemed to feature the trip. One had to do with the president's ideas on missile defense, if not a program on missile defense, where he apparently made not very much progress with NATO. And then his ideas on denouncing the Kyoto global warming treatment, where again he seemed to make very little progress with the European community. Is that about right?
I think it's about right. This trip puts much more emphasis on the personal than on the policy. I think he wanted to talk about more than missile defense. He wanted to talk about a new strategic framework.
Mm-hmm.
And he's probably made a little progress on that, I think, as he's moved along. Clearly did not make progress on global warming. He's put himself down solidly on the side of NATO enlargement, mm-hmm. European Union enlargement.
Yes.
That goes over, I think, reasonably well there. But the emphasis on the personal will predominate here in this trip.
What does it mean that the president has run into demonstrations against him in Europe?
I think it means that Europeans are really upset by what they see as a wholesale rejection of multilateral problem solving, to use a sort of a bureaucratic term. But here the United States, or this administration, has said that the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty is dead, that they plan to probably abrogate the anti-ballistic missile treaty, and they kicked the Kyoto Treaty off the table, bang, 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 all three. The Europeans wonder whether the U.S. plans to just be a global hegemon and only make decisions by itself. They are really deeply unsettled by the administration's early months in office.
Did you want to add to that?
Well, I think Jessica's right. The U.S.-European relationship is now running into some real stresses. There are deep cultural divides between Europe and the United States. And you're seeing the results of those strains and stresses in this transatlantic relationship today. Now, that's a very significant development in American foreign policy, because what it means is we're going to have to start paying a lot more attention to the divisions between ourselves and our strongest allies and friends.
On occasion, in issues like North Korea, for example, the president has shown an ability to change his mind and move towards the consensus of others. Is that likely to happen on these European issues?
I'm not sure I'd call it moving towards the consensus of others. What he has shown an ability to is to correct egregious mistakes. And this administration has had an awful lot of them in these early months on foreign policy, of which the worst was the one you mentioned. Humiliating the president of South Korea and putting the talks with North Korea on ice. And they have recognized the error in that and walked it back. They've also corrected themselves on disengaging from the Middle East peace process. This has really been a ready, fire, aim administration. And now they're taking a little time under the pressure of a lot of criticism to do some aiming.
I think the president came into office fixated on Clinton. And what Clinton was for, he was against. As he has moved to see the realities of the situation, he's beginning to find out that the Clinton policies were not all that bad. And he's been educated a lot by the string of foreign leaders that have come in here. Has he moved towards the center? Absolutely. On not just one, but half a dozen issues, on the Balkans, on Iraq, on North Korea, even a little bit, not much, on global warming, on the Middle East. And he understands a little better now that foreign policy, to use a sports analogy, is played between the 40-yard lines and looks very different than it does from the campaign trail when you're in the Oval Office.
Yeah, well, now, Lee, there's another side to this trip which has not gotten a great deal of attention here. During the meeting with the European community, the president said, we spent a lot of time talking about Africa. Africa, says the president, is a nation that suffers from incredible disease and it suffers from poverty as well, while leaving out the reference to nation. Is it important that the president is now featuring Africa as an important issue in American foreign policy?
Yes, I think it is. Look back to the campaign, and all of us had the impression, I think, that the president was going to pretty well ignore Africa. His attention is being now focused on it. He sent his Secretary of State there. They made an agreement, I think, this past week to increase some funding for dealing with the infectious diseases in Africa. So the president is coming into the mainstream. Now, are they doing enough? They certainly are not. This AIDS problem in Africa is a humanitarian disaster, catastrophe of the highest order. And I think the policymakers are far too niggardly in their approach to the problem.
Jessica, the agreement that was made at the conference in Sweden was that the president and the leaders of the European community agreed to support the creation of a global fund to combat AIDS, malaria, and tuberculosis in Africa. Isn't that enough?
Well, this has already been proposed by the Secretary General of the United Nations, and the U.S. has pledged $200 million for this year. The problem is the number that Secretary General is looking towards is around $8 billion a year, so this is a very tiny sum of money relative to the need.
And do you think, Lee, that it helps when the president says, you know, he recognizes the problem, but his director for U.S. aid, Andrew Natsios, says we're not sure they know how to use drugs for AIDS because they don't know what time it is?
I thought the statement by the AIDS director was most deplorable. That'll have a terrible impact. He seems, so far as I can tell, to be approaching the problem in Africa strictly on the prevention side. Now, that's an important side of dealing with the problem of AIDS. But treatment is also terribly important, and a lot of lives can be saved and extended with proper treatment.
There are 25 million people in Africa with AIDS, and what Natsios was saying was, well, we can do something about prevention, but we're not going to do anything about treatment.
Mm-hmm.
So that's to commit 25 million people to death.
Thank you, Jessica Matthews. Thank you, Lee Hamilton. All we can do is wait and see how this policy develops. This is Daniel Shore.